Welcome back to the second hour of the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can download that app wherever you get your favorite app stores. Big orange background with a white A. Download it. Look for WILK News Radio. Favorite it. And that's it. You got us. It works seamlessly with your CarPlay. We can also be found on iHeartRadio platforms as well now. Excuse me. So after the election, and yeah, we'll go back a little bit because the information is now coming out. After the election, you have a lot of people in the media that were running around trying to prop up the Democrat team of Harris and Waltz that were running for re-election. Well, now that they're left out in the lurch, they're trying to find ways to profit off of their time covering these things. So there's a new book out. And wait till I get into who are the authors of this book. And it says Kamala Harris went with her gut to select Tim Walz as her running mate after overly ambitious Josh Shapiro left a bad impression in her. And we're going to get into that in a minute. So there's a new book on the end of Joe Biden's presidential campaign and the birth of Kamala Harris. It sheds light on the process behind vice president choosing of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate, a decision widely panned by pundits in retrospect. 2024, How Trump Retook the White House and the Democrats Lost America is the name of the book. It was released this past Tuesday by journalist Josh Dawsey of the Wall Street Journal, Tyler Page of the New York Times, and Isaac Arnzor of the Washington Post. Now, again, you have the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. These are the authors of this book. They describe the vetting process that came down to three finalists: Walz, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, and Arizona Senator Mark Kelly. Interesting, three white males, right? Yeah. All three candidates did a final interview with Harris at her residence, the book explains, adding that when asked what they wanted to drink, Shapiro and Kelly both chose water. Walz chose Diet Mountain Dew. All right, well, that's probably what he likes, right? The water is always the safe choice. Appeal with rural voters. Now, this is what they were looking for. The Harris campaign at this time, because they did not choose a running mate. She was the sitting vice president. Appeal with rural voters was the top priority for the Harris ticket. And the book states that Harris's advisors felt that Walz was the best candidate to do that. Well, fire all these people because they're utterly useless and led you in the wrong direction. Let's just be there. Nancy Pelosi, as per this book, privately pushed for Tim Walz as well, because she worked with him in Congress. The book said about the former House Speaker, the pitch for Walz was straightforward. He could appeal to white voters across the blue wall states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and hopefully help Harris with male voters. And he's never lost an election. I mean, if you look at the metrics on paper, you could say, okay, let's have a look at this guy. Anyone who's seen the guy, though, has to come on now. Really? Really? So while most political experts felt Shapiro, Governor Josh Shapiro, Pennsylvania, also a governor of a swing state, was the most logical choice, the book states that the interview with Harris and Shapiro revealed the two were not a perfect match. He came across as overly ambitious. Now, I want you to listen to this, Pennsylvania. Josh Shapiro came across as overly ambitious, pushing Harris to define what his role would be. He also conceded it would not be natural for him to serve as someone's number two, leaving Harris with a bad impression. And this is as per the book. And that is the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post authors. Conversely, the authors explain that Walz was differential, while showing no interest in himself and flatly denied any interest in running for president. He went so far as to proactively volunteer reasons why she should not pick him, the book says. In his interview on Friday with Harris, he said he never used a teleprompter before. Now, this information has come out prior. I've heard this story before. And on Sunday, he told Harris, then this was during the vetting process, I would understand if you went with someone else because I'm really nervous about the debate, and I don't think I'd do well. Still, the vetting team did not fully appreciate his tendency to misspeak, his folksiness, sometimes tipping into factual imprecision. That's how they say lie? That's, I guess, what they're going with? He lied about his military service. He lied about being in Tiananmen Square when it happened. He misspoke about a lot of things, let's be honest. Waltz would ultimately draw intense scrutiny on the campaign trail for his folksiness. There they go again. You know what? He's just a redneck. You know, he misspoke. Come on. With a series of blunders, including the characterization of his military service and claim he was president at Tiananmen Square massacre. The book says Harris struggled to decide between Shapiro and Waltz, believing that she had a better rapport with Waltz, but understood the importance of Pennsylvania. Harris's team, according to the book, told her that polling did not offer a clear answer as to which one of the two candidates would help the ticket more. Listen, I'm not a polling expert, but I truly believe that if she would have picked Josh Shapiro, they would have pulled Pennsylvania, which could have tipped the election. Now, we'll never know, obviously, but I think based on his popularity with the Democrat base here, his popularity with some moderates, even though he's been kind of beating that up lately because he promised a lot of things as far as school choice and vouchers and stuff like that, would just never come through on. And just what Kamala Harris saw in him, overambitious, didn't want to be anyone's number two. I think we all see that in him. He's not being the Commonwealth's governor right now. He's running for his next election, which would be the president in 2028. I think we all know this. I think this is very common knowledge. I don't think him not being chosen as the vice president for Harris in his mind was bad. Maybe he sabotaged it to begin with because he did not see her as winning, because believe me, he has his own polling people too. And they could lie to us all they want. They knew that they were in hot water. They knew that this was not a gimme. When Joe Biden got pushed aside and they elevated Kamala Harris, I think a lot of people in the Democrat Party, not that they would say anything because it would ruin fundraising and everything else, figured, hey, we're going to have to write this one off and we're going to have to focus on the midterms in 2028. But if you read in this book from progressive authors that were privy to this information, they were their favored journalists out there. How they're describing the Pennsylvania governor should not surprise you. Overly ambitious, didn't want to be a number two, wanted to know precisely what his role would be. You know why? Because he was already running for president. Yes, he was going to be her vice president, but he was already running for president in his mind. Or he said, I'm going to push hard because I really don't want this gig. But I can't just say that because that ruins my credibility with the Democratic Party, especially that progressive wing of it. For the people to say that there was no empirical evidence that Shapiro would deliver Pennsylvania, and with that, the White House, I think they got it wrong. I think they could have possibly swung Pennsylvania if he was picked. As Shapiro was being considered, many pundits speculated that his staunch support of Israel could be an issue, given the progressive wing of the Democrat Party being vocally pro-Palestinian, resulting in protest, sometimes violent, across the country. The book said that Harris' campaign was aware of the issue. Much of the progressive wing of the Democrat Party declared war on Shapiro, largely because of his support of Israel, the book said. Some Shapiro allies saw the criticism as deeply unfair and borderline anti-Semitic, since the governor was an observant Jew, but his position on the Palestinian conflict broadly aligned with the Biden administration and other vice presidential contenders. The lawyers vetted Shapiro, did flag some comments they viewed as more incendiary, particularly as it related to pro-Palestinian protests on college campuses after October 7th. One that caught their attention on commentary was on CNN from April before the election. We have to query whether or not we would tolerate this if this were people dressed up as KKK outfits or KKK regalia making comments about people who are African-American in our communities. That was a quote from Shapiro. Ultimately, the book said she went with her gut, chose Waltz, believing that he would be a better fit in a decision that her staff was unanimously behind. Now, I think Tim Waltz is an utter buffoon. Kamala Harris, I think we've seen enough of her to make your own decision. I don't think she was the preferred candidate regardless. She was simply just elevated because they had no one else at that time. They did not want to go through a messy primary, and they paid the price for it. The reason I bring this article to you today more is to highlight Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, in title only, because he is truly campaigning. He is not projecting the governor vibe. He is not showing results of a governor for the people, for all the people. He's simply waiting for his next position. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I got a couple of phone calls now we'll get to. Let's go to Bill from Pittston on Shapiro. Bill.
Yeah, I read the book you're speaking about. Matter of fact, I've read all the books that have come out about Biden. And I agree with you. I think Shapiro wanted no part of being vice president. And I think he did find a way to get out of it. And I think you're right about him wanting to be president. But I don't think he has a snowball's chance in Hades to become the presidential nominee for the Democrats because of the strong progressive voice against him.
I think you're right. The anti-Semitic base, these progressives, especially from the Michigan and Wisconsin area and stuff like that, and New York City at this point, and Philadelphia. I mean, we could start rambling these places on. I don't think he's shown a strong hand with dealing with them and denouncing it. As far as anti-Semitism goes, I think it's going to be a big problem for him as well. And the things, you know, he hasn't delivered here in Pennsylvania, the things he promised, the things he said he would reach across the aisle for and just hasn't done and depended on things like legalizing marijuana and such like that. But, you know, I glanced over the book and I read some excerpts of it. And I do believe that he went in there and was overly aggressive to kind of be pushy to take himself out of the running.
Well, John Fetterman even warned people about the same things. He said those exact same things about Shapiro, that he was pushing, he planned to be president, and they got a little bit of a tiff there. But I think Fetterman was spot on with it, and I don't see Shapiro as being anything like an overwhelming personality. And like you said, Waltz was a buffoon that nobody took seriously.
How was the rest of the book here? You said you read the entire book.
Yeah, I read all the books. It was okay, but it's just substantiating what we already know. There was just little bits and pieces that people in Camilla's staff, they thought they didn't like Biden. The people that were on Obama's staff beforehand, they were sucking up to him, and he didn't come out really open with Joe, just said things aren't looking good. Then he went to the staff, and he said everything's a mess. And they considered him to be a brick, if you know what I mean. They just said that's all he is a conceited, you know, that kind of his arrogance and disdain for what Biden was doing. That's probably the most damning thing. But the other stuff was about what a buffoon Waltz was and just how stupid the whole Camilla organization handled things. But I gave it away because I figured don't want to give these guys a lot of money. So after I read it, I passed it on.
Well, I appreciate you checking in with us, Bill. At least somebody else read the book. I appreciate you giving us your insight.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Let me go to the phone now. We have Mike from Wilkes-Barre on the rail line. Mike.
Yes, I don't believe that the rail line is going to end in Lackawanna County. I think they're going to bring that right into Luzerne, Carbon, Columbia, and Schuylkill counties. There's thousands of acres of mined out land around here. Used to call them strippings. The holes are still there. They were never backfilled. I think in time we're going to be getting garbage from Boston to Baltimore, all points in between, which would be New York City and Philadelphia. Beside that, who's going to want to commute 3.5 hours on a train to go to work and 3.5 hours back to get home? Rail passenger service will never work.
Yeah, unless it was a fast rail, unless you're doing it under 2 hours, I don't see it as a commuting option. But, you know, we make it maybe weekend trips or such like that. But, I do hear what you're saying. I did hear some some stories about Luzerne County looking about rail service. You know, their rail system has been under review for a purchase and such like that to another entity, maybe for a Philadelphia line for them. And connecting them all would be the perfect plan for them. So, Mike, I appreciate you checking in.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And, he's right on, because I did have a texter come in and says, monthly ticket from Port Jervis, New York, which is just over our border at Matamoros, to New York City is around $500 a month. One way is $24. It's 3 hours each way, total of 6 hours travel if there's no delays. Scranton is a bit further than Port Jervis as a comparison. So, yeah, you're probably looking at over 3 hours. $500 a month, $24 each way. People here willing to pay that. We'll see. I mean, it's cheaper than driving, but still expensive. It's 4:30, coming up on 4:32 here at WILK. Time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement. Fred from West Pinson, I'm going to get to you right after this, so please hang on still. The one we have from Pennsylvania on this day, July 10th, is Chief of Police Elmer Rittner Hollenbach, Newville Borough Police Department in Pennsylvania, on this day, July 10th, 1941. Chief Police Elmer Hollenbach suffered a heart attack while arresting three juveniles who had broken into a warehouse. He was transporting the three boys to the police station when he became ill. And unable to drive further, several passerbys took him to the nearby doctor's office, where he collapsed, was pronounced dead several minutes later. He served with the Newville Borough Police Department for 4 years and had previously served as a constable in the borough for 10 years. He was survived by his wife, two daughters, and three brothers, and two sisters. So that's the one from this day, July 10th, throughout history from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that made the ultimate sacrifice. I'm going to go to the phone. We have Fred from West Piston on the rail line. Fred.
Yeah, how you doing? I was wondering the tracks that 60 miles from Scranton. Do you know who owns them?
Do not.
You do not. That's a biggie, because Casey and Matt, what's his name?
Matt Cartwright.
Cartwright was trying to push this for somebody, because it's a headache for somebody. Whoever owns them tracks, if they still own them, they're just taking a headache off somebody. If they did this, who's going to own these tracks?
It would be that railroad authority. Different entities would own it in different sections. It would be that Pennsylvania Railroad Authority that would be established under it, and then it would go to the New Jersey Transit for the New Jersey, and then Amtrak would own the last route into Penn Station.
What about the Scranton? Who's going to own that? No, I just
the rail authority that's would be developed in conjunction with it. They're the ones that are spearheading this.
See, this is not going anywhere, like you just said with the last caller, and I don't see anything good in it at all. And that's
Until there's more solid information and they're more realistic about actually doing the collateral
and
things that need to be done.
A day, I can't see three trips a day. Not there, You know what I mean? How that is through the Poconos. I can't see that.
Yeah, and I don't know how it would it run one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and one in the evening. You know, how it runs and how it goes, what the price point is. See, we haven't seen a lot of this, so we would need, plus the time. Like I said, Port Jervis to Penn Station is 3 hours.
50, 60 miles an hour just to make that happen, and I don't see that.
Well, they're talking about 6 or 7 stops, too, so even if they were going 60 miles an hour,
That's what I'm saying. This thing here is trying to get a headache off somebody. Do somebody a favor to get rid of their headache. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. So, well, we're going to keep monitoring it there, Fred.
I
appreciate it.
I'd like to find out who owns them tracks. That's the biggie.
Yep. All right, Fred. Okay. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you. It's 4:40 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together.
Yo.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show. It's time for Today in History. Because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? Before we get started in the history, I just want to ask some questions from the last segment there. The Regional Rail Authority owns 60 miles of track and the stations on the route between Scranton and the Delaware Water Gap. East of the Delaware Water Gap, the project partners with the New Jersey Transit and New Jersey Department of Transportation for the route to New York City, while Amtrak owns the last 7 miles into Penn Station in Manhattan. So that's the breakdown there. And what's the region? I looked into who owns the Regional Rail Authority here in Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Northeast Regional Railroad Authority, the PNRRA, was established in May of 2006 through a collaboration of the Monroe County and Lackawanna County Railroad Authority to manage and operate rail assets in Northeast Pennsylvania, covering nearly a 100-mile regional rail system that includes that 60-mile track from Scranton to the Delaware Water Gap. So that's who owns the track from here to New York City. The Regional Rail Authority owns 60 miles of track to the Delaware Water Gap from Scranton. From there, on the other side, the New Jersey side of the Delaware Water Gap, it's owned by the New Jersey Transit and New Jersey Department of Transportation, all the way to the border of New York City, while Amtrak owns the last 7 miles into Penn Station in Manhattan. So that breaks that down. So I hope that answered all those questions there. As far as today in history, though, what do we have for July 10th here in U.S. history? Some significant events. 1925, the Scopes Monkey Trial begins. Dayton, Tennessee, the famous Scopes Monkey Trial began. High school teacher John T. Scopes was charged with violating state law by teaching evolution. The trial became the national spectacle, pitting Clarence Darrow against William Jennings Bryan, symbolizing the clash between science and religious fundamentalism. 1890, Wyoming became the 44th state of the United States. Wyoming entered the Union and became the first state to grant women the right to vote, the right it had allowed since its territorial days. This solidified its nickname, the Equality State. 1943, the Allied invasion of Sicily begins. World War II, American and British forces launched Operation Husky, the invasion of Sicily marking a major step in the campaign to push Nazi forces out of Europe. U.S. General George S. Patton played a key role in that. Some notable births today. What do we have? 1920, David Brinkley, renowned television journalist. Brinkley co-anchored the Huntley Brinkley Report, and later this week with David Brinkley, he helped shape modern American TV journalism. 1875, Mary McLeod Bethune, African-American educator and civil rights leader. She founded the National Council of Negro Women, was a close advisor to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Some legal and political moments. 1985, Coca-Cola brings back Classic Coke. 1985, after a major backlash over the introduction of New Coke, Coca-Cola announced the return of its original formula, rebranded as Coca-Cola Classic, a rare example of major corporate U-turn driven by public opinion. And that's pretty much today in history. Jake, we have anything sports-wise going on? Any news on the football shenanigans? Has practice started with your Steelers quarterback that's expected to have his farewell tour soon?
You gotta love it. I know that the end of this month, July 31st, first time since 2000 that we're going to have a preseason game. It's going to be the Hall of Fame game, and that's between the Detroit Lions and the Los Angeles Chargers. We're getting closer and closer to training camp, Rob.
When's training camp? Is there a set date for all training camps? I couldn't even tell you.
Within the next 2 weeks, EJ knows the dates better than I do because I think he's actually going out to the one in Pittsburgh. But, yeah, I would say within less than 2 weeks, that's usually when they'll be starting up.
Yeah, I've been down to the Jets train, not the Jets, the Eagles training camp down in Philadelphia. My son actually had a combine or two there when he was being recruited by some colleges. And used to just take a day trip up to the Jets camp because it was up here in Cortland. I don't even know if it's still at Cortland, but it was great when it was there. But it was a nice day. I mean, it was you went up there, you parked to get in. They had a souvenir tent where you can get gear if you wanted to, and you know they had it cordoned off, but you went and watched practice. I was there the last time I was at the Jets camp, and I wasn't really a Jets fan. It's just it was close by. It was a nice day ride.
Mania.
Yeah. I was there when Sanchez and Tim Tebow were battling for starting quarterback. So it made for a great camp. And I saw one of the most aggressive fights between offense and defense there. And it was funny because Tim Tebow is a big guy for a quarterback. And he got right in the middle of these guys and started pushing people back and breaking up the fights. It was... Yeah, he did show some leadership there where Sanchez kind of stayed back and didn't get involved. You know, I'm not going to hurt my hand or anything like that. But Tim Tebow, one of the things that impressed me about it, he got right in there and he was breaking the teammates up. But it got pretty squirrely. I mean, they even broke out their fight into where the crowd was. They broke through the barriers.
Ah, the good old training camp fights. Even better when you have the two teams that do the joint practices together. I know that the Raiders and the Rams, they've had their fair share of training camp fights. I'm trying to think. I think it was the Bengals and the Rams a couple of years ago? Yeah. So that's bound to happen sooner or later.
Anything going on with our NASCAR series? What's happening there? You've been quiet on social media as far as NASCAR goes.
Swept the weekend at Chicago, winning on Saturday for Dale Earnhardt Jr., then on Sunday. And this is five times that he's raced the streets of Chicago, and he's won four of them. Could be five for five if he didn't get taken out last year.
That's right. Chicago's and a street race, right?
Sonoma Raceway this Sunday, 3:30 on TNT. And once again, Shane, he's going to be racing for Dale Earnhardt Jr. on Saturday. And more than likely, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he sweeps the weekend again. I mean, road courses, New Zealand, Australian V8 supercars, that's where Shane comes from. So it's definitely his bread and butter right now.
Have they been to Dover yet?
I've been to Dover a couple times. That's actually next weekend.
Next weekend's Dover?
But I don't think I'm going to go. Just Kelly and I, we're keeping a close eye on Bryce, but definitely next year.
All right, I asked for selfish reasons because my wife's going to be going down to Virginia Beach, and we drive right by Dover Speedway. So luckily she's leaving in the middle of the week. You probably have the haulers headed there, but other than that, Wednesday shouldn't be much of a problem for the traffic.
Yeah, the Xfinity race is on Saturday, and then the Cup race will be on Sunday. And I've been to Dover four times, along with the 30-some times I've been to Pocono, and definitely plan on getting back there next year.
All right. Well, I appreciate the input on both some football and some NASCAR.
Thank you.
It's 4:50, coming up on 4:53 here at WILK. We'll be back. It's 4:55, 87 degrees here on this Thursday, July 10th. So the 7th annual Rocking the River summer concert returns this Friday. And here's everything you need to know about it. A three-week series takes place at Millennium Circle on River Commons in Wilkes-Barre. Crowd sizes range anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 people, as per the organizers. This Friday, you have the Ultimate Led Zeppelin Experience. Opening act Flaxie Morgan kick off the series this Friday night. Zoso is the band. Maybe I'm Amazed, a tribute to Paul McCartney, with an opening act Tori V. And Karma are scheduled for July 18th. And the series concludes July 25th with Halfway to Hell, a tribute to AC/DC, and opening act Aaron Fink and the Fury. It's free. for all ages. They do recommend you bring a long chair if you'd like someplace to sit down or a blanket or such. This year will be the first time we're presenting the incredible and explosive loud music of Led Zeppelin, the timeless sounds of Paul McCartney, and the firepower of AC/DC, said Alan Stout, executive director of Visit Luzerne County. The gates open at 5. The music runs from 6 to 9 p.m. There will be concessions there, food vendors and beverages from Susquehanna Brewing Company and Bank and Vine. And again, they're encouraging guests to bring their own lawn chairs or blankets. Parking is available at the Water Street is always a great option, the garage over at Water Street. There is also more than 800-meter parking spaces in the streets of downtown Wilkes-Barre, all within just a few blocks of Millennium Circle, with no meter fees after 6 p.m. This includes spots on North Franklin, North Main, Union Streets, and around Public Square. So you're looking for something to do Friday? Weather, for the most part, I mean, there might be a passing storm or such, but for the most part, looks pretty good. Nice summer day. We're used to a little rain and not. So get out and listen to a little of Led Zeppelin. Letting the lead out on a Friday night is always good. You have a Paul McCartney tribute band the week after that, and then Halfway to Hell, an AC/DC tribute band. Sounds like a good mix-up to me, and it's from what I hear, and I've never been there, but the reviews that I've heard, it's been an outstanding time. So look for something to do. The things that we have in our area that are free or inexpensive to our residents, from our AAA baseball teams to the water park up on Montage, to the concerts we have here, to the arena, to the Kirby Center, to free concerts like this, to Mohegan Casino, where they have the events there. What did it, Jake? You go to them all the time. What's that called over there?
Oh, Party on the Patio.
Party on the Patio. That's it. It escaped me for a second there.
Yeah, Philadelphia Freedom tonight.
That's who's there tonight? Mm-hmm. All right. You going?
Not tonight.
Not tonight.
Yeah.
Jake's got to prepare for his show tomorrow, so we'll see. But there's always great things to do in our area is what I'm saying. And take advantage of them. Take advantage of them. Make a date with someone. Call a friend you haven't seen in a while and say, hey, why don't we do this? Maybe that old high school friend, a college friend you haven't seen for a while. You're single. Maybe that person you got your eye on. Say, hey, let's go check this out. You can't go wrong at a Led Zeppelin concert, right? Because all you need is a whole lot of love. Dad jokes are coming in. Dad jokes are coming in. But you may need love, so. Getting silly now. It's close to 5 o'clock. I know you're wheeling out the door if you're doing that 9 to 5. Good for you. Hopefully you got plans. Maybe I'm doing something tonight. I think it's wing night someplace. I think we may go to a wing night up by me. Because I have a hankering for some wings and can't turn down a good wing night. The second best wings in Pennsylvania, so they say. And last time I went, they weren't bad, so we'll check them out again. It's coming up on 5 o'clock here at WILK News Radio. If you got plans tonight, let me know what you're doing as well. We'll be back after the 5 o'clock break with the last hour of the show here.